Om Shri Sai Ram, offering our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind from Team Radio Sai. And this, dear listeners, is another beautiful afternoon on a beautiful Thursday, and that is why we are here in the studios of Radio Sai in Prashant Nilayam, bringing to you this live afternoon satsang. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem. I cannot help but notice what a very significant date it is today. You know, the 23rd of May, 2013. You know, if we go back about 7 decades ago, this day marked...
I mean, not about 7 decades. Interestingly, from the discussion we have had, it's exactly 7 decades
ago. Correct. Exactly 7 decades ago. That is the May the 23rd in 1943. On this day, we can say that it was the first ever public revelation of Little Satyam, where he proclaimed himself to be Sai Baba.
Exactly. This was that very momentous day, dear listeners, when Swami declared to the world and gave to the world his true identity. He said, "My name is Sai Baba, and worship me on Thursdays." The beautiful, instruction of asking his devotees to worship him on Thursdays, especially Thursdays, was given on this day.
You know, Prem, people often get confused. The other day, our colleague, you know, Sai Prakash, he was telling me how he felt that avatarhood declaration happened, you know, when Swami's father asked him, "Who are you? Are you a madcap?" And then he said, "I'm Sai Baba." And he threw flowers. And the flowers formed the Telugu letters, "I am Sai Baba." And he felt, you know, that is avatarhood declaration.
Right.
But the avatarhood declaration day that we celebrate, which is October 20th, was the day actually when he sang the bhajan Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam. So, Sai Prakash was saying that he had got this mixed up, and so on one avatarhood declaration day, on one October 20th, he prepared a card, you know, and he wanted to show Swami. And in the card was this painting of a lad wearing a white shirt and knickers.
Right.
He's sitting on a rock, and beside the rock there is letterings saying Nenu Sai Baba. I am Sai Baba, made from flowers.
Right.
And he held this out. This was a card. So he said that when Swami came, he looked at him and said, he looked at the card and said, "Idi Emra, what is this?" He said, "Swami, this is avatarhood declaration."
Okay.
As if, you know, Swami had forgotten and he is reminding. Then Swami said, "Adevaru, who is that?" Pointing to, you know, that boy there in shirt and knickers. Then Sai Prakash told, "Swami, this is you." Then Swami said, "When did you see me in knickers?" You know, Swami asked him like that and just patted him on his cheek and walked away. Well, so momentous has been this event, this episode where Swami, you know, threw the flowers and made the letter Sai Baba, "I am Sai Baba" appear, that is often considered as the first declaration. The declaration, in fact. But since the avatarhood declaration day is October 20th, today we know this as the first declaration day.
I think why that confusion is, according to me, if you ask me, is, you know, when Swami said, "I am Sai Baba, worship me on Thursdays," he still left a hope to the family that they can recover this boy. You know, okay. They felt that, you know, there's something wrong with him. Maybe he's possessed by some spirit or something, and they can do something to get him back to his normalcy.
Mm.
But it was on 20th October when Swami said that, "This is not a lunacy. This is not an aberration. This is a mission I've taken upon myself.
My devotees are calling me.
My devotees are calling me and waiting." And he made it absolutely clear that, you know, I'm not under illusion.
Maya is gone now.
This Maya has left me. So I think, you know, as you said, 23rd of May, when Swami said, they were all shocked, and that was the first time they were hearing it from Swami, but still maybe they hoped that this would just settle down and this too shall pass, but it didn't happen that way.
Do you know, Prem, in fact, his father asking him, "Who are you? Are you madcap?" And Swami throwing the flowers to say that, "I am Sai Baba," that did not take place on the same day, actually. They were spaced apart by about a week to a fortnight. But before we go into all those details, you know, just thought that this should be the first thing we should tell in today's afternoon satsang, because this Thursday also happens to fall on this momentous and historic day, which is May 23rd. And so, we made a good beginning. But if we look back at Swami's life, at his story, It was an amazing sequence of events that actually led to Satya's father, who loved Satyam so much, come to him with all anger and ask him, "Are you a madcap? Are you a ghost? Who are you? Tell me who you are." Brandishing a stick, threatening to beat him up. What was the sequence of events that led to this episode where his father got so angry?
Desperate.
Well, it will be wonderful, and maybe today's satsang we can dedicate to this sequence of events that took place. And dear listeners, to begin the story, we have to go back where Swami had just left the school at Bukkapatnam and had joined the Kari Basava Swami High School at Uruvakonda.
Yeah, apparently, after finishing his teacher's training, Swami's elder brother Seshamaraju was appointed in that school, you know, at Uruvakonda as a Telugu teacher. And in right honest, he wanted to take Swami along with him, just as he had had Swami in Kamalapuram, so that he could pursue his education. But I think one episode which happened before that is the exam, the ESSLC exam.
Okay.
When Swami went to Penukonda to write that exam.
The right? Elementary school leaving certificate
exam. That and we've heard Swami himself describe that event so many times about how nobody would ever clear that exam from their region. And then there were these two friends of Swami, Ramesh and Suresh, who used to sit on either side of Swami and used to share the desk at school. So how Swami went with them to write the exam, and Swami would say that their roll numbers were way apart. Swami's was 6 and the other was 100, and there was another, the other guy was 60 or something. And they were very, very apprehensive about taking this exam because it's so difficult. But Swami tells them that, "Don't worry, I will take care of you." And you know, it's a very difficult incident to understand. Because here Swami tells them that, "Don't worry, I will make sure that you pass." And I think I'm sure that you have this episode in your mind where Swami says how he makes those two boys pass.
Correct. In fact, Swami narrates in his discourse that the minute he saw the question paper, all the answers he knew. In a trice, he knew the answers. Not only did he know the answers, within, say if the exam was a 3-hour exam, within the first hour itself, Swami had completed his whole answer sheet and written down all the answers perfectly. And then Swami says that he walked up, took extra sheets, and this time rewrote all the answers, but with Ramesh's roll number.
Roll number, name, and in his handwriting.
In his handwriting. That's what, that only God can do.
Right.
And then, as if that was not enough, he completed this in the second hour. And in the third part of the examination, he went and took some more extra sheets. And this time he did the same for Suresh. He wrote down Suresh's name, Suresh's number, and in Suresh's handwriting, wrote it. And that is how, in 3 hours, Swami submitted not one, but 3 answer sheets.
And as I was saying, you know, it's difficult to understand this because even when we were students, Swami would never encourage such things. But one thing which Swami would always tell when he narrated this incident is, you know, what was wrong? They had surrendered to me. It was my duty to take care of them. You know, from Swami's point of view, it was that was the message which Swami wanted all of us to take, that if you surrender to Swami, if you depend on Him completely, God will do anything to take care of you.
I think, Prem, it will be very relevant to make another point here. It is said, even in the, you know, while describing Lord Krishna also, the same thing has been said. It is not as if did whatever Krishna, the Lord, speak, or did whatever He do, were they according to Satya and Dharma. It is whatever He spoke became Satya, because He is the ultimate. And whatever He spoke became, whatever He did became Dharma. So too, I feel, I mean, that was the same thing, you know, somebody asked whether somebody asked a very renowned Vedic scholar, asked him, I mean, in fact, it was Ghantikota Subramanya Shastri, if I remember it right,
okay,
the person who wrote the Suprabhatam. So his son actually had asked him that, "Father, you know, Swami quotes so many things from the Vedas and these scriptures. Whatever He is telling, are they really there in the scriptures? Because, you know, some things looked very, that it might not be in the scriptures, actually, some of these things, thought like that." But the reply that He gave, He said, "You fool, it is not whether whatever Swami is telling, it's in the scriptures. Whatever Swami is telling is the scripture. So that is what happens when we talk about divinity. Whatever divinity speaks, whatever divinity does becomes dharma, whatever divinity speaks becomes satya.
And I think this is also an opportunity or a window which Swami opens for faith. Like, suppose you have a person whom you admire, whose intellectual prowess you rely upon. Okay, and he gives, let's say a political situation is there, and he gives a commentary on that. Even if you do not agree with what his views are, you tend to agree with that view because he's making it.
Correct.
Because you rely on his intellectual abilities. You say that, no, if he's making that statement, then he knows what.
Correct. He knows, even though I don't know, I trust him.
I think in Swami's life, there are so many such events, which in our moral understanding, we cannot explain.
Correct.
And in our understanding of God, we cannot put it in perspective.
Correct.
In what we think of God as compassionate or righteous, we might not be able to put it in place. But when we know Swami, accept Him because of the other things which we have experienced in our life, we know that if that Swami who has done so much for me is doing this, then He must definitely have a reason for it. And I don't need to, you know, reason into it and confuse myself. I just need to accept it.
That is faith.
And that is faith. I think Swami gives us opportunities to express faith.
And for that faith that Ramesh and Suresh had in Swami, in that year, the only three people who passed the exam, well, no prize for guessing this, were Satyanarayan Raju, Ramesh and Suresh.
Right.
And in fact, Swami narrates in his discourse about how the villagers with great joy, you know, carried these boys in palanquins and as celebrating, because nobody else even passed the examination, while these three passed in the top grades. So that was the end of the Bukkapatnam school experience, after which Swami went to Uravakonda. And when Swami went to Uravakonda, I think is about 100 kilometers from Puttaparthi.
Right.
So when Swami went to Uravakonda, he joined, as we said, the Sri Karibasava Swami District Board School. Now, this Sri Karibasava Swami was a kind of spiritual head for the Lingayat. Among the Hindu worshippers, there are, like, you know, people who worship Shiva and people who worship Vishnu. So among the Shiva worshippers, this is one called Lingayat, where they, you know, worship the Linga form of the Lord. So for such people, he was like a spiritual head, a social reformer, and in his name was this Sri Karibasava Swami Government District Board School, I mean. That is where Satya's brother, which is Sheshamaraju, used to teach, and so therefore Swami also got enrolled in that school.
It's even as you were talking about Baswa,
Karibasava
Raju, and the movement, Lingayat movement, actually. It's an interesting episode which happens much later when Swami travels that part of Karnataka. I mean, these Lingayats are very, very staunch Shaivites.
Correct.
They won't worship any other god other than Shiva.
And they have specific rivalry to Vishnu.
Right, and they will not utter any name which is related to Vishnu.
Krishna, Hari, Vasudeva, Govinda, nothing.
So once, during one of Swami's travels to Karnataka, Swami gave a discourse in one of those Lingayat regions. And at the end of the discourse, as was Swami's usual practice, he broke into a song, a bhajan, and he sang Govinda Krishna Jai.
Oh God.
And the entire crowd joined with Swami and sang, because they were so mesmerized by Swami that, you know, and it was actually published in newspaper saying that Sai Baba makes
Lingayat
sing a Krishna bhajan.
You know, what else can they do if their Lord Shiva sings Hari? You know, it is said, Vishnusya Hridayam Shiva, Shivasya Hridayam Vishnu. It is said that Vishnu is lost in contemplation of Shiva, and Shiva is lost in contemplation upon Vishnu. So, I mean, all these analogies also, I think, are brought in just to show the unity between the Lords. And it is about you liking a form and following it, but don't take it to an extreme where you say that my form alone is a supreme, the other form is not existent. It is all, I think, misunderstanding and stupidity at best.
Coming back to Uravakonda, I mean, the name Uravakonda comes from Uraga Konda, actually. That's what Kasturi says in Satyam Shivam Sundaram. Uraga meaning a snake, and Konda a mountain.
A hill.
Yeah, hill. And the main reason is that there is a hill in this place which looks like a
thousand-headed
snake.
It exists even today, Prem. And seeing the photographs and reading this, I am having a burning desire in my heart to really visit Uravakonda, see all these places where Swami had been. Well, yuck. The minute Swami went to Uravakonda, it is said that his fame preceded him.
Right.
And I was reading this book called Love Is My Form. Mm-hmm. That is an excellent compilation, a work for which a doctorate has been given to the compiler, Shri Padmanabhan. Great work, monumental work, in which he has built together, stitched together the story of Swami during these days,
mm-hmm.
from accounts and diary entries of all the people, including Venkamma, who was Satya's eldest sister, who took care of him like a mother.
Right.
She was so much elder to him, so almost like a mother to him. So everybody's personal diary accounts he has taken, and so it is with the help of Satyam Shivam Sundaram and this Love Is My Form book, dear listeners, that we will be constructing this part of his story.
Right.
So as I said, when Satya went to Uravakonda, his fame preceded him.
Right, because Swami had done so much in Kamalapuram, in Bukkapatnam, that by the time Swami went to Uravakonda, people were already asking Seshamaraju questions about his younger brother. And, you know, is it true that he materializes objects? Is it true that he can write poetry, which even the elders cannot comprehend?
And that Seshamaraju, I guess, did not like it so much.
And because Seshamaraju himself was a Telugu
poet.
A Telugu teacher who was also a poet. And maybe he was not very happy with his teenage younger brother getting the importance for his talent.
So much accolade, so many accolades and so much adulation.
Right.
I'm sure he wished for some part of it.
Right.
Well, the instances are many, Prem. You were narrating about that headmaster.
Yes, you know, Swami would say that, you know, the teachers in that Uravakonda school, there were a few who were already devoted to Swami. They were waiting for Swami with reverence. There were a few who were skeptical, and there were a few who wanted to prove him wrong. So they were all there in that school. And Swami would say the headmaster of that school, one Mr. Lakshmipati.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami says that he was so devoted to Swami that this was much before Swami revealed himself or claimed what he really has come to do. But Swami would say that this headmaster would wait for Swami every day in the morning before he comes to the school. The moment he comes in, he would take him to his chamber, make Swami sit on his chair, and he would sit on the floor and massage Swami's feet.
Wow.
And Swami would say, no sir, don't do this, this is not right, you're so elder to me. And this man would say that, I know what you are.
Lucky indeed was
definitely.
That man.
Definitely. And Swami would in fact say that, you know, whenever Swami would refer to these people who had realized what Swami was, who had recognized the divinity in Swami, Swami would say that this was not an accident. This was because of their, you know, Purva Janma Prapti, because of all the good deeds they've done in the past, that they could recognize Swami. Because, you know, I think most of the people were skeptical and most of the people were diffident to accept Swami as to what he was saying. But there were a few lucky ones who actually could see what Swami was.
When you look at lives of these people, you know, these lucky ones who were able to recognize him, I really, you know, get that conviction and that belief strengthens, which says that there is nothing accidental in this universe. There is nothing like an accident. And everything is some way destined. And Swami's capabilities shown through in every activity of his. You know, whether it was dramatics, whether it was athletics. He was a champion athlete in all the running events, everywhere. It was Swami who was the winner. And even in cultural activities, undoubtedly, he was not only a wonderful actor and composer, he also used to direct. He also used to guide others on how acting should be done. And in fact, it was during the Uravakonda years that Swami wrote his first play, which has become immortal today,
right,
which is Cheppinatlu Chestara.
Definitely. And I think it's been enacted so many times after that, so many times in Swami's presence, so many times by Swami students, by Balvika's
children. In different conferences it has been acted out. And, you know, adapting to the newer age, the students and Balvika's children have in fact taken the same theme but just modernized the context and played it, because the context may keep changing but the theme and the message that this story that Swami wrote gives is immortal and for all times to come.
Right. And Swami says how this thing came up. I believe it was another great individual who was also the teacher of Swami in Uravakonda school, Mr. Tammiraju.
Manchiraju Tammiraju.
I mean, he's a great person. I'm sure that even in the following parts of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, there are mentions about him.
Mm-hmm.
How he became one of the earliest and most ardent devotees of Swami, who continued to come to Swami with his family. And Swami has performed some mind-boggling miracles in his life.
Mm-hmm.
So this person who had recognized Swami's talent, he had actually requested Swami to write a play.
Okay.
Asking Swami to put up a play for, I think, some school day or something like that. And that's when Swami writes this play, and Swami even takes the role of the protagonist of the drama which he writes.
Yeah, the protagonist's name was Krishna.
Krishna.
The drama Cheppinatlu Chesara means, do deeds necessarily follow the words? It's a rhetorical question. And that rhetorical question repeats itself again and again in the play. In the first scene where the mother, you know, she's giving a discourse, and she tells all the people who are attending the talk that one must always serve charity, and charity is a way, serving your fellow men is the way to God. Once she says that, after that parayanam or that satsang is completed, a poor beggar boy comes home and he's asking for alms. He has nothing to eat. And the mother angrily just shoos him away. Tells him, don't you have any better work to do? Just get lost. This the boy Krishna sees. The next moment, a very healthy, well-fed sadhu, he comes home, you know. Seeing that sadhu, the mother invites him in, you know, does pada seva for him, feeds him well. He's already well-fed, but feeds him well, gives him money as that dakshina, and then sends him, and she's happy. That time Krishna, the protagonist, which the role that was being played by Swami, goes and asks the mother, mother, what is it that you're doing? You said that we have to serve those who need. You know, dina dukhiyon se prem karo, sai prasan hoga. Even at that age, sai would be prasan if dina dukhiyon se, if you give them love. But when he tells that, the mother shouts back and telling, don't talk beyond your age. Cheppinatlu chestara. I mean, do deeds actually follow the words?
Do anybody do what they say?
People don't do what they say. You don't keep
don't
me
this.
Or beholden to my words. That's the first scene.
And then the mother, you know, is upset with the way, the obstinate behavior of the child, so drags him to the father's chambers, you know, where the father's, Swami
father's
says,
presence.
You know, Kasturi writes that father's role was that of an accountant, where he's sitting with his assistants and he's doing his work. So the little boy Krishna is dragged to the father's house, in the father's room, and the father begins giving him a lecture. And he says, no, you should behave properly and all that. And he goes on into saying that how important education is.
Mm.
And he says, no, for a young boy of your age, all your concentration should be in studies, because education is what is going to, you know, be the foundation for your life, and how every child should get education, you know, goes on into that mode. And just then a poor boy comes into the office of this father, and, you know, very pleadingly requests for 1 rupee. You know, in those days, 1 rupee must have been a big sum of money. He says, I need 1 rupee to pay my school fees. If I don't pay that by tomorrow, I'll be asked to leave the school.
Yeah, name will be struck off the rolls.
Right. So he asks him that, why don't you give me that 1 rupee. So the father, in that drama, he pulls out his purse and shows the empty purse and says, I don't have any money. I'm running short of money, so I don't have any money. It lies to him and sends the boy away. And just after that little boy leaves, some of the colleagues of this father come home and tell him about a new officer who's coming to take charge of their office, and how they should welcome him with a grand party. So then this man draws out some money, 200 rupees.
20 rupees.
20 rupees, I'm sorry. From the drawer, and gives it to them and says, yes, you should have a grand party. You know, don't compromise on the expenses. Let it be really grand. And even offers to make a speech, a welcome speech for the man who comes. So this little boy Krishna, who sees this,
is disgusted.
Really, to say the least.
And the next day when he goes to school, his disgust gets and goes to the next level, because the teacher there tells that, you know, now the school inspector is coming, and when he asks you how many chapters have been taught, tell him that the teacher is now teaching chapter number 32. Actually, the chapter that was going on was chapter number 23. So he tells them to tell a lie, and he tells, just to keep you prepared, I will teach you chapter number 32 today itself, so that tomorrow when you can all appear very wise and smart. And chapter number 32 happens to be the story of Satya Harishchandra, the king who adhered to truth all his life. Seeing this blatant hypocrisy that is going on, Krishna comes home, throws away his books, and says, I'm sick of all this, I don't want this.
And you know, Swami very beautifully says that, all through at home I'm taught something, my mother and father teach me something, the teacher teaches me something, but eventually none of them are actually following what they teach. If I'm all the while being taught something which I don't need to put into practice, what's the point in learning?
What's the point in learning? Exactly. And the drama ends on that note, leaving the viewers to think about the deep message. That deep message that has been conveyed so simply. And this was written by a teenage boy during his Uravakonda years. And as always, it took the whole school by storm. And, you know, it only added to compliments like, of course, other than Satya, who can do it? Satyam has only done it.
And there was another occasion, you know, apart from this drama, which became a big hit.
Mm.
Swami says that one of the political leaders approached Swami and asked him to write a song.
Mm.
You know, about the political scenario. It was for some meeting which they were having.
Mm.
And it seems Swami told them, yes, I'll write a song. And he asked for some props. Swami said, you get a cradle and you get a mannequin of a doll, of a child, and place it there, and I will compose a song. And Swami composed a song describing the events in the world happening then as a lullaby.
Oh, okay.
A very, very beautiful little song, you know, talking of scenarios happening in Germany and the Cold War which was happening and all that. And during that time, nobody in that school or in that region knew about the names which Swami was mentioning.
Okay.
So before we talk about that, we'll just play that poem. Much later, maybe in the year 2000, Swami actually reeled out that entire poem.
Yeah,
and of course, at the end of the poem, Swami says something which is also very, very beautiful. So let's listen to that.
What Swami says?
Yeduvaku pasibala, yeduvaku tandri, yediste ninu bharata virudanaraya, jo jo.
It was a finest piece of lullaby. Oh, my dear child, don't cry. If you cry, you cannot be a warrior, a worthy citizen of Bharat.
Yeduvaku pasibala, yeduvaku tandri, yediste ninu bharata virudanaraya, jo jo. Hantakudu hittaru amara rashyapai, dandetti vachanani jadisi echitiva, jo jo. హిట్టరును చంపుటకు ఎర్ర సైన్యంబు వీరుడవు స్థాళీలు కలరు ఏడువకు జోజో. ఐక్యతగా ప్రజలంతా చేరి పోరాడి స్వాతంత్రమును పొందగలరు ఏడువకు జోజో. ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క పాటలు రాసి ప్రజాలోపల కూడాను మంచి ఆనందకరమైనటువంటి యొక్క లాలిపాటలుగా అందరికీ ప్రచారం చేసేవాడిని.
The compositions of Bhagwan, they were received very well by the whole public. They were very happy about these compositions.
ఈ హీతరు ఈ అంతకు వీరందరూ సాయిబాబాకి ఎట్ట తెలుసును, చాలా చిన్నపిల్లవాడే అని చాలా ఆశ్చర్యపడేటువంటి వారు.
People were very much surprised that how is that so
young Hitler. ఈ స్థానీయులు వస్తున్నారని చెప్తున్నారే, ఏ వీరికి తెలియనటువంటి పేర్లే, ఎట్ట తెలుసును ఈ పిల్లవాడికి.
How is that this young Baba know the names of Hitler and Stalin?
Sai ki telinatunti levu.
There is nothing that Sai does not know.
Kani
but
telinattu gaane nen natam chestuntanu.
But he pretends as if he does not know.
So that's that little poem which Swami recollected after so many decades. And unfortunately the translation of that padyam, that poem, is not complete. Swami says, you know, it's like putting a child to sleep, Swami, saying that, what are you afraid of?
Why are you not sleeping? Are you scared that Hitler's armies will come and damage you or destroy you? Don't worry, before that can happen, the red armies of Stalin will destroy Hitler's armies. So, Swami is briefly narrating the history of what is happening in the world at that
Absolutely.
Time.
And you know, the very beautifully Swami says that, are you scared that this will not happen? His army is very powerful. Swami says, people of all the countries will get together and defeat the
and that was a prediction
forces.
At that time.
It was it was a prediction nonetheless.
In 1943, we see it, because all this happened finally in 1945 and 1946,
right,
when the Second World War ended. But Swami had already told about it in a lullaby, in a place where nobody had even heard these names. You know, and towards the end, Swami said that there is nothing that Sai does not know, but he behaves as if he knows nothing. In Uravakonda days, he gave one or two instances where he showed his omniscience and omnipresence. It was a time when, you know, one of the teachers lost a fountain pen, an expensive fountain pen. And Satya, in fact, told him that I can locate that pen for you. And he said that pen was with a servant of this teacher. This teacher was just not ready to believe it, because that servant had been serving him from so long, and he was so honest.
Right.
Then what Swami told the teacher was, write down this letter that I am dictating.
Mm-hmm.
And this Swami dictated a letter from the servant to the servant's son. Who was in Anandpur, and the servant's son was literate while the servant was illiterate. So it was the servant's son knew that every time his father wrote him a letter, it was dictated to somebody else who could write. And so therefore the teacher wrote down, and Satya gave the word saying, I hope you are doing fine. I hope that pen is well with you. It's an expensive pen. Please take care of it very well, like that. And within a few days, the reply comes from the son saying, the pen is very fine. I shall be very careful with it. Thank you so much for that wonderful gift. and that is how that little theft was discovered, thanks to Satya's omniscience, and his fame grew.
Right, and many times Swami would play, the children would lose something. Somebody would have stolen something. They would come and ask Swami. Swami would say the first letter and the last letter of the word, of the name of the person who has the object in their possession.
Giving clues.
Right. And one more episode which happened was, something like a recap of what happened in the previous avatar.
Uh-huh.
You have the episode of Chand Patil in the Shirdi avatar.
Correct.
The man who loses his horse.
His mare. Baba calls it back for him.
Right. And he says that it is there in this particular place. And that's how he's the person who brings Shirdi Baba finally to Shirdi.
Correct.
Along with his daughter's wedding procession, they come. A similar thing happens, there's a Muslim, you had these tongas in those years where you have
horse-drawn
carriages for taxi, And there was this Muslim man who had lost one of his horses, which meant like his business, which is livelihood. And then he comes searching for it, and somebody suggests to him that, why don't you go to this young boy who seems to be having miraculous powers of finding out objects which are lost. So he comes to Swami, and Swami tells him that 1.5 miles away from here there is a grove. You go there and you will find your horse. And so that is how he goes and he finds this mare there.
Wow.
And after that, Swami's popularity grows even in the Muslim community. They say every time they a cart he's going by and Swami is walking, they offer him a lift. And then they realize that whenever they take Swami in their cart, they seem to be having better business on that day.
Oh, okay. So there's a competition to take him in the cart.
Right.
These were instances where Swami showed some kind of similarity to Shirdi Baba. But yes, what we left the listeners with was how that episode came about, where Swami vocally, unequivocally, and publicly declared that I am Sai Baba, the same Sai Baba of Shirdi. So, to get to that, let us see the kind of living condition that Swami was in. Swami's house in Uravakonda was on a street that is called as Temple Street, because there was one Subramanya Swami temple. Subramanya is Kartikeya, the younger son of Lord Shiva, the other son being Lord Ganesha. So, Subramanya temple in that street. After which the street had got the name Temple Street.
Okay.
And this Subramanya temple, like the other temples in Bukkapatnam and Puttaparthi, became a favorite haunt for Satya and his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do Pandari Bhajan.
Okay.
In fact, it is said that one evening, spontaneously, Swami composed a bhajan during one Pandari Bhajan session in this Subramanya temple. And that is what we know today as Subramanyam Subramanyam Shanmukanatha Subramanyam, that bhajan.
Okay. Wow.
So, in that street, the whole house where Swami lived was a very small house, about 8 feet by 4 feet, two rooms of 8 feet by 4 feet, and there was no window, Prem. There was no window, no kind of ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it is said that during the day, Swami would be made to climb up and remove 2-3 tiles here and there from the roof so that sunlight can percolate into the house.
Okay.
And at night time, you have to use a Petromax or some kind of kerosene lantern for a while, and after that put off, there's nothing else. There's no ventilation. So a door would be left slightly open. And Satya's brother, that is Sheshamaraju, and his brother's wife, they would sleep in the inside room, while in the outside room it would be Venkamma, her son, who is also a Satya, and Satya.
Okay.
So they would sleep, and as we discussed before, Venkamma was almost like a mother to Satyam.
Right.
So Swami, Venkamma and Venkamma's son would sleep in the outside room. This was the kind of life that Swami had. And in his daily schedule, you know, Swami has often narrated of how he used to get water.
Right.
Reading in this book, Love is My Form, you know, what shocked me was, there were two wells, Prem, not just one well.
Mm-hmm.
There was a well called Gilakala Bhavi. Mm-hmm. And Gilakala Bhavi was the well for general purpose water, that is washing your feet, washing vessels, taking bath. And there was one kind of officer's bungalow on the left of the house.
Okay.
And that is from that, there in the bungalow Bhavi, you would get water for drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the bungalow Bhavi was about 3 kilometers on the left of Swami's home. And the Gilakala Bhavi was about 2 kilometers to the right of Swami's home. So every day it's about 5 kilometers just to reach the wells and 5 kilometers to return home. A minimum of 10 kilometers Swami had to walk to fetch water. In fact, it is said that one of those days when Swami had come back to Parthi from Uravakonda, Ishwaramma was massaging his whole body with oil.
Mm-hmm.
She noticed deeply bruised shoulders. The young shoulders of Satyam were carrying so much. So she said, she told her son, Satyam, there, you know, people are exploiting your goodness. Why should you work hard like this? No need, you come back to Puttaparthi. And that time, you know, Swami made a statement. He told his mother, this is there in Ishwaramma, the chosen mother, in that book which Kasturi has written. Ishwaramma, Swami told his mother that, mother, if people are drinking brackish water, my heart cannot bear it. To save them from this kind of poison, if it requires me to struggle and do whatever possible to get them sweet water, I am ready to do it. It is not a punishment for me. I am doing it very happily. Please don't stop me from doing it. How significant that is. Because years to come, that is what Swami spoke even in his discourse, right? When people are drinking brackish water, how can I keep quiet? That is how the Chennai Water Project came about. That is how the different water projects came about. So this was the kind of life Swami was leading, a very, very hardship-filled life in Uravakonda. Though he had so much admiration and adoration at school, at home it was not so much so.
And I think after this comes a very, very important event, which was going to trigger the things which were going to follow.
Yeah, and the thing is, nobody is sure. You know, it is said the event is termed as the scorpion bite event, but nobody is sure of which scorpion bit or whether a scorpion bit.
Because what they actually noticed was, Swami just squeals and holds his feet and falls into a faint.
Correct. And how that came about is also interesting. And this has been taken from Venkamma's diary, Venkamma, Swami's elder sister, from her diary.
Okay.
She says that it was somewhere during the Shivratri.
Mm-hmm.
And Shivratri 1943 comes around March 4th or March 5th.
Right. Satyam Shyam Sundaram actually records the date as 8th of March.
Oh, when this event happened. So
after,
I think,
Shivratri.
Yes, matches perfectly well.
3 or 4 days.
About 3 kilometers northwest of Uravakonda, on the road that leads from Uravakonda to Bellari, is a temple called Budagavi, which apparently exists even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Shiva temple. And during the Shivratri time, Swami used to be a regular visitor to this temple. So one evening, you know, after a Pandari Bhajan session, Swami comes home and tells Venkamma that, I will be a little late today evening.
Okay.
So please keep the door open. I will come back a little late. And so therefore that night, it's only four of them sleeping in the house.
Okay.
And Satya goes. And Venkamma says that every day morning when she wakes up, she has the habit of looking at God's picture.
Mm-hmm.
Prostrating and then only getting up. But in Uravakonda, they had no picture of any god in their home. So she would open the main door, go out and have the first darshan of the Tulsi plant. Tulsi, which is considered equal to God.
Right.
The holy basil. So that day morning, she woke up and to her surprise, she saw that Satyam was not at home. She opened the main door and there Satyam was. He had just arrived. And it was early in the morning, something like 3 a.m. And so she was shocked. She asked Satyam, what is it? Why are you so late? So Swami's hands were cold. It was apparent that the whole night he has been out in the cold. So he just said, don't tell, be quiet. He came in. Then she said, Satyam, you know, you are supposed to take some rest. He said, yes, I'll take rest. Let me have a wash and come. And that is how Swami went to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Bathroom means, it was about 2 feet by 2 feet and some stones there, that's all. And one copper vessel with some water, that's all. Nothing great as a bathroom, in fact. But when Swami went there, within a few minutes, Venkamma says that he screamed out, Ayyo! Ayyo is an exclamation of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And it went silent, so she rushed in there. And exactly as you said, Swami was clenching his foot, and his foot appeared to be swollen, and Swami seemed to be in pain. So Venkamma goes immediately and wakes up Sheshamaraju and everybody. And everybody comes, and you know, Sheshamaraju is the person who suspects that a scorpion has stung Swami.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the reputation of the scorpions in Uravakonda.
Because Uravakonda, as we discussed, you know, it's supposed to be the hill where the snake resides, literally. Mm-hmm. It is believed in the region that snake bites and scorpion stings are lethal.
Lethal, yes.
Right. Nobody is believed to recover from these attacks.
And they're believed to, and they were also common those days. So Sheshamaraju was sure that this is a scorpion sting. And therefore, immediately what he does is he sends a letter. He immediately writes a letter which is supposed to be sent to the parents to inform them that, you know, your son has got stung by a scorpion. In the meanwhile, in the temple street itself were a few physicians and an allopath also.
Mm-hmm.
Allopathy doctor. So, Sheshamaraju summons them early in the morning itself. But Swami wants to take a little rest. So, he just sleeps. So, they allow the boy to sleep. But within a few hours, Swami gets up and he's alert as usual. He in fact goes to Sheshamaraju and tells you, give me the list, the shopping list. You wanted vegetables and provisions. I will go. I'm fine. I will do the shopping and come. And Sheshamaraju is happy that nothing seems to have happened. He gives him a shopping list also.
Mm-hmm.
And Venkamma, records in her diary that Satya brought beautiful, wonderful vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Very tender and soft brinjals, And the brinjals are brought and Sheshamaraju gives instructions to Venkamma saying, don't feed that boy anything other than rice and rasam.
Mm-hmm.
Rasam is, soup, kind of.
Indian soup.
Yeah, very dilute soup with almost nothing in it, no vegetables in it. So he said, don't even give buttermilk, don't give any vegetable, we don't know what has happened. But Venkamma says that when she was cooking, she saw how tender the brinjals were, how wonderful the brinjals were. And Swami apparently at a young age also had a liking for brinjal.
Right.
And I have seen, one or two occasions where Swami is relishing brinjal. In fact, Swami has said that brinjal is a vegetable that brings joy to all. That's how he has played on the word brinjal.
Okay.
Well, brinjal is my favorite also. So, and that's why I felt happy that it was Swami's. So, Venkamma kept aside a little of this brinjal vegetable that she had cooked,
mm-hmm.
thinking that secretly I will smuggle it to Satyam to eat.
Okay.
So, after Sheshamaraju left for work, so she was giving this brinjal, she had served everything and she made Satyam eat, sit on a stool. No, not on a stool, that wooden plank, to eat. But Swami seemed strangely lost. He was looking into nothingness, just not eating. So she says, Satyam, what is this? Eat. Why are you not eating? But his hand is, limp, just dipped in the plate. She in fact comes and picks up his hand with the food in it and picks it up till his mouth so that he can eat. At that time, Satyam just closes his eyes and collapses.
Oh.
Okay. He collapses in a heap.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when, this was what happened on March 8th. And she gets very panicky. She immediately sends word for Sheshamaraju, who comes rushing back. He comes rushing back. And immediately, in Uravakonda, as you said, that place, that hillock where snakes are supposed to reign, there is a temple of the goddess Muthyalamma.
Muthyalamma.
Also known as Sankulamma.
Okay.
And that is when Sheshamaraju told somebody, you rush to the temple and offer a coconut to the goddess.
And that temple is supposed to be quite difficult to access because they had to climb half the hillock and then put a ladder and go into the cave.
Hmm.
And it was a very special deity who was housed there. So there these men are going into all these things and climbing down, and they go into that cave and they break a coconut, and that's when, like Kasturi puts it, that they realized that Swami was not unconscious, but Swami was super conscious.
Exactly. In the home, Venkamma records that suddenly in what seemed like a coma, Swami seemed to be in a coma, simply woke up and said, the coconut broke into three pieces. And then, you know, went back into coma. Into so-called coma.
Right. And much later when these people came back from the shrine, they come with three pieces of coconut. And as we all know, generally the coconut is supposed to break into two pieces.
Three is considered inauspicious.
Right. And they come with three pieces.
And so, you know, while on one hand it seems inauspicious, isn't it amazing that here is Swami who has revealed what has happened so far. He has shown his omniscience, omnipresence. But you know, as man always falters, the same thing happened, it has happened again and again. That is what happened then also, that they just thought, oh my God, this is unlucky, it broke into three. They forgot that part where Swami had already said that.
And I think after that came the marked difference in Swami's behavior. Because till then, Swami was like, you know, the most energetic and the most exciting person in school. You know, he was always busy with something, as you said. You know, he was writing poems, he was conducting dramas, Pandari Bhajan group, and he was literally doing satsangs and all. But suddenly he became a lost person.
Yes.
You know, he would withdraw himself and very, very introvert.
But that happened much later, actually.
Okay.
In between Prem, as I got to read in this book, which he has so wonderfully collated from interviews from so many people, so many things happened even before Swami gained consciousness.
Okay.
And before Swami became that kind of silent and, you know, introvert kind of person, there was a phase where he became very violent, upset, angry, revolting, rebellious.
Okay.
So, how that happened was, so once this has happened now, Swami has revealed about that coconut. So Shesha Maharaju sends now a telegram telling the parent, you better hurry up. Crazy things are happening here.
Right.
So once this reaches actually the parents have already received the letter. And once they read this, you know, Ishwaramma had been told, this is from Ishwaramma, the chosen mother. She had been told that when a scorpion stings or a snake bites, the person has to be kept awake. Because if he sleeps, he may never get up.
Okay.
So the minute she heard that Swami has slept, he's in a kind of coma, she became very worried. She told her husband that come what may, I am also accompanying you. And in those days, traveling from Puttaparthi to Uravakonda was no joke.
Right.
And they had no money. In fact, there was a weaver by name Chinna Babaya, who used to run chit funds in Puttaparthi, you know.
Okay.
Collect two anas, five anas from different people and put in his own. He was a very successful weaver, so he had quite some savings of his own. And he had a chit fund, so with him at that time he had about 300 to 400 rupees.
Okay.
From that he gave 100 rupees. You know, we were speaking about the value of 1 rupee.
1 rupee.
100 rupees he gave to Pedda Venkamma Raju, because Pedda Venkamma Raju went to him, he was a good friend of his, and he said, you know, my son is in trouble and I don't know how much money I will need for what I'll have to do. I need money, you have to give me. And he gave. You know, that was the kind of friendship he had with that person. And Ishwaramma and Pedda Venkamma Raju have started off towards Uravakonda. In the meanwhile, in Uravakonda, a doctor has been employed, an allopathic doctor, who is shocked because there is no trace of venom in Swami's blood. There is no venom at all. And so he says, I don't think it's a scorpion sting. But anyway, he gives four injections which have to be administered every 3 to 4 hours. Which means at night, somebody had to keep awake with Satya. So that, you know, somebody had to keep awake means somebody has to administer that injection to him. To this boy who is unconscious and comatose. So there was a neighbor by name Kasibatla Sriram Murthy. Who had a special love for Swami, you know. He, in his heart somewhere, he felt that there is something special about this boy. He is not an ordinary boy. And he loved this boy. So he volunteered to keep awake at night and administer those injections. So four injections were with him. After administering two, he saw that there was no change in the boy. He got very worried, and he has revealed this in an interview, Kasibatla Sriram Murthy. So he got worried that nothing is happening to the boy. So he felt that we have to take Swami to some hospital. It's no use if we leave him just here. And then he says, suddenly Swami woke out of the coma and told him, don't worry, Sai Baba will take care. And again went back into coma.
Okay.
Just imagine, he has not heard the name Sai Baba. And Swami tells him, don't worry, Sai Baba will take care. Goes back into the coma. And so it happens that two times, once for the temple and once here, that Swami has come out of coma. The third time Swami comes out of coma is the next day morning, when this, you know, our Kasibatla Sriram Murthy reveals this to Sheshamaraju, what happened in the night. Sheshamaraju feels that, you know what, I think maybe he has been possessed. Something strange is happening. I don't know if it's poison, I don't know if it's a mental disease, I don't know if he is possessed by a ghost. So he decides to call, you know, and also Swami started getting fits.
Okay.
So there was a student leader mm-hmm. by name Abdul Ghaffar.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami, Sheshamaraju called him and told, get some of your friends, when he gets fits, somebody has to hold his hand and legs. So he got very scared and he told, please send one of the boys, I'll give my cycle. Let him go immediately now to Puttaparthi, I'll tell you where my house is. Please go and tell the parents to come.
The idea is to cycle all the way till Anantapur and from mm-hmm. Anantapur catch a bus and go to Bukapatnam and then take a bullock cart or go by walk to Puttaparthi. You know, that was how difficult it was to travel.
Correct.
And they explain how even as he was giving the routes to this boy, Swami tells that why take all the trouble? In another hour or so, you know, the mother and father are coming here.
And in fact, he tells Sheshamaraju, go to the bus stand and receive them. Which was a very sensible advice because nobody knew how Ishwaramma and Pedavenkamaraju looked.
Okay.
So somebody from the family had to go. And since Venkamma was here, you know, women used to not do all these things. So Sheshamaraju himself had to go. And as Swami said, within an hour, the parents were there. And he got the parents. See, again, there was a chance for him to realize what was happening. But they were so lost in their attachment. And the parents came rushing. And by the time they came, apparently, Swami had regained consciousness. And this was a phase which was more terrible than the comatose phase.
Mm-hmm.
Because he seemed like a completely mad person. He was shouting, he was screaming. Interspersed with poetry. He was reeling out poetry about the epics. The great epics. And this time again, Sheshamaraju was shocked because some of the Telugu that Swami was using, even he could not understand. So that happened. In the middle of that, Swami, you know, in great anger said, go call that Narayan Shastri. He is telling it all wrong. Now this Narayan Shastri lived a few homes away. He was a renowned scholar. And he was actually giving a Parayana satsang on the Bhagavatam.
Right.
And here was little Satya screaming. He told his father and his brother, go tell him to stop what he is doing. It is nonsense. He is shouting and with such command that the father had to obey. In fact, when the father went to Narayan Shastri's house, that Pandit's house, and told him, you know, my son is saying that you are telling it wrong, so please, you know, he toned down the way Swami had told. Narayan Shastri got wild. He got very angry. He said, who do you think you are? Do you know whom you are talking to? You get lost and tell that boy he has lost his mind. At that time, the father says, you know, I also know that. Please, why don't you come and drive some sense into that boy? He is not listening to any of us. And at that time, Narayan Shastri says, I am coming. You know, I will drive some sense into that boy. He comes home. At that time, even before he can open his mouth, Swami tells him, the Hamsa Gita that you are propounding is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami expounds on the Hamsa Gita, at the end of which Narayan Shastri is in tears. He falls at Swami's feet. The first, you know, where intellect, ego, everything has to bow down before the Lord. So he falls at Swami's feet and goes back. And when they see this, they're disappointed actually. They feel, oh God, here was a chance of somebody driving sense into our little boy and he has also failed. And after that, it became too much. The way Swami was speaking, the things that he would say. And when this happened like that, somebody came and told that there is a wonderful herbal doctor at Buchaya Garipalli. Buchaya Garipalli is about 5 kilometers from Karnataka Nagipalli, which right. is just next to Puttaparthi. So they told you, take him there. So Satya was muttering all this and shouting all this. So that is why they took him there hoping that the herbal doctor will do something. Nothing, it was of no use. That was when somebody said that there is a kind of a tantric at Brahmanapalli, mm-hmm. which is just, you know, before you enter.
No, actually this Brahmanapalli is near Rurukonda.
No. That is the third Brahmanapalli. I am coming to that.
Okay.
That is the Brahmanapalli near Kadri.
Right.
Where the final...
Okay, right.
Okay. So this Brahmanapalli, this person, Narsi Reddy, His son continues to live in Brahmanapalli and he was interviewed. So they brought him almost back near Puttaparthi to this Brahmanapalli, where he was the first to scratch Swami's head. But he didn't shave Swami's head, you know.
Okay.
He made scratches on Swami's head and put some powders and tried what he could. But Swami apparently was not cured. And that was when somebody came and suggested the name of one magnificent tantric. His name was Mupur Appaya Swami. And they said that he stays in a village near Kadri Brahmanapalli.
I think before this, one more sorcerer was brought.
Okay.
You know, among all the efforts, the one effort which, you know, it's mentioned is the district medical officer is consulted.
Oh, okay.
You know, they try even that. The doctor who's attending on Swami goes to that district medical officer. He puts him on a 3-day course. And that again doesn't work.
Okay.
And then they bring one sorcerer to Seshamaraju's house in Uruvakonda.
Correct.
And
yes.
Even as this man walks in, and Swami's, I think, still in that, doing that coma phase, when Swami looks at him and says that, you know, all these years you have worshipped me. So all you have to do now is just offer your pranams and get out of here.
Okay. Yes, yes. Now I recollect. Yes, that happens.
And right. And immediately that man looks at Seshamaraju and says that this boy is not to be treated. He needs to be worshipped. And, you know, offers his pranams and walks away. That's another episode which happens where, you know, as you said, the intellect and the prowess of man comes and offers, bows down in front of divinity and walks away.
And, you know, these episodes actually prodded Seshamaraju to think of ways of treating Satya outside Uruvakonda. Because apparently in Uruvakonda, everybody seemed to be worshipping this brother instead of treating him.
Right.
So that is why they tried out
Bhuchagari
Palli.
I think by this time, Swami was moved to Puttaparthi, as you're saying. I think the Brahmanapalli, Swami was taken to Puttaparthi, and this was also during, I think, closer to the vacation time. Because as you said, March 8th, the scorpion bite. So the
In India, the summer vacations begin towards the end of
April
March.
April and May.
April and May.
So I think that was the time when Swami was going through all this, and Swami also moved to Puttaparthi. And even in Puttaparthi, there were so many doctors who were brought.
Correct.
And there's a description where they say that as Swami's got from Uruvakonda to Puttaparthi, he consults two doctors on the way. One at Bellary and another.
Not Bellary. Bellary is not on the way. That is exactly these two. One is on the way back, that is Bhuchayagari Palli. And the other one happens, as I said, at Brahmanapalli.
Okay.
Finally, he is in Puttaparthi. And that is when they hear about this, as I said, Mupur Appaya Swami. Now, Mupur Appaya Swami, if you see his history, he has also got a kind of aura about him, you know. They say that he was having special yogic powers. In fact, there was a legend that stated that when he was treating somebody for an addiction, when stealthily that person tried to get back to his addiction, out of the blue, out of thin air, Mupur Appaya Swami appeared before him and told him, "Hey, I know I am watching." You know, there were such legends surrounding Mupur Appaya Swami.
Okay.
So that is why somebody came and told that if anybody can treat Swami, that is this Mupur Appaya Swami. And he stays at Kadri. So hearing his reputation itself, they were all very...
That's another little incident which happens.
Huh?
This sorcerer actually sends two of his assistants to Venkamaraju's house.
Okay.
To give a list of things which they have to bring along with him for this treatment. And then, you know, they come and they give the list. And even then Swami says that, you know, you missed out these things.
You missed out these items from the list, correct.
And Swami tells them.
Yes, correct. So they have to get all these and go to Kadri. And they have, as you said, he has sent his assistants to ensure that everything is in place. But this is missing. So in a bullock cart, they set out towards Kadri. You know, they go via Mudigubba, which is the longer route. The shorter route that we have today with an excellent road to Kadri did not exist then.
In fact, you know, there's another incident which happened during this time. I was reminded even as you were saying that violent phase which Swami was going through. It was impossible to actually control Swami, even physically.
Correct.
Swami was in that kind of a phase. In fact, when one of the people who were residents of Puttaparthi when this event happened, they described how Swami was taken to Kadri.
Oh, okay.
It was so difficult to put Swami into a bullock cart.
Huh.
Because it had happened before. You know, once they had taken Swami into the bullock cart, they want to take him somewhere. And Swami... I think this happens later. We'll come back to that. It was so difficult to convince Swami to get into the bullock cart. And they say that when about 5 or 6 strong-bodied, able-bodied men came and held Swami, Swami turns and kicks one of them, and he actually loses 3 or 4 of his teeth.
Yes. This actually happens a little later.
Okay.
Okay. And the person who lost his teeth, his name is Chandramouli, mm-hmm. the uncle. And in fact, it is said that he lost the 2 of his front teeth. And in the 80s, do you know what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Chandramouli later on has revealed it in an interview that Swami came and told that I know a very good dentist in Bangalore.
Mm-hmm.
I will get 2 golden teeth fitted for you. But, you know, Chandramouli, the person, he felt he was actually Swami's uncle that way, far related uncle. He felt it was such an honor and such a privilege, and he refused that offer from Swami. He said, no Swami, I would like to be toothless. I would like to have that as memory. A memento of that memory of that beautiful episode. Yeah, correct.
Not a beautiful episode, but a memorable and
a memorable episode. Yeah, episode now memories. It becomes beautiful, you know, in retrospect it becomes beautiful. So yeah. So that is how they started off to Kadri. As you said, with difficulty they put him in the cart and they set out there. And the exact village is Viranjaneya Garipalli,
mm-hmm.
at which there was a place called Bhogga. Bhogga is a kind of a well which is perpetual because it is fed by different streams.
Okay.
It has an inlet and an outlet as well. So it's like an open well with steps all around,
mm-hmm.
like a huge public bath, you know,
right.
that kind of a place. So at Bhogga, near that place was where this person stayed. So when he was taken, the first thing that he did was, you know, I remember once in a session, this was revealed to me by my sister's mother-in-law,
mm-hmm.
that they were sitting and somebody was narrating Swami's life in Swami's presence. And when it came to this part, Swami said, stop, don't, skip this part. Because Swami said the devotees won't be able to take it. In spite of remembering this, I feel like just going ahead because I feel once in a while we should know what Swami went through. You know, the Swami's head was shaved and 4 large crosses were pierced onto his scalp. And onto that was applied a paste of garlic and chili powder with salt. After that, he was taken to the Bhogga well and 108 pots of that cold water was poured continuously. And that was not it. A pit had been prepared in which neem leaves had been boiled in water.
Mm-hmm.
And then to it was mixed buffalo dung.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami was buried neck deep in that slurry of neem leaves and buffalo dung for hours. And after that was done, he was brought out and a kind of kalikam paste was prepared.
Right.
Kalikam, you know, it's very... all pungent materials are mixed to make that paste. And that paste was applied directly into his eyes. And Swami's eyes swelled up.
Not just the eyes. Swami says that the whole face gets distorted.
Out beyond recognition.
Beyond recognition. The head swells. The eyes, Swami says, you know, it swells so much that the opening becomes just a mere slit. And
the mother is not able to bear this.
Right. And you know, they say that this is such a, you know, demonic mixture which is applied,
mm-hmm.
that when they see Swami like this, when the mother and the sister try to go near Swami, actually, in fact, sometime later Swami describes that the mother didn't even have the courage to go near Swami. It was all through the sister Venkamma who was with Swami.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, she was the one who always stood by Swami, especially during this period. And you know, she describes that even when they went and stood next to Swami, they could feel the burning sensation.
That pungent it was.
That was how pungent this kalikam paste which was applied to the eyes of Swami were.
And, you know, even we get tears thinking of how Swami
and
simply,
you know,
bore it without
right,
her.
And you can imagine the plight of that sorcerer who was going through this, because he was a boy and, you know, the sequence of events as you narrated, the crosses which were made and the paste which was added and 100 and all that, all through Swami was absolutely stoic.
Mm.
There was not even...
one scream,
yeah,
one squeal.
Yeah, there was not a tear, there was not a... He didn't even try to protect himself. And then they explain when this kalikam paste is, you know, applied, the face gets distorted. That is when the body starts reacting. Even then Swami does not scream, but the body is shivering. And, you know, the face, Swami is not... the eyes are continuously tearing. But still Swami was not showing out his pain. And this man was absolutely surprised because he has never seen a person who after the Kalikam paste is applied, does not say anything about it.
And this was something that, as you said, the mother and sister could not bear. They in fact tell this Mupur Appaya Swami that, you know, great are your methods, but our son doesn't seem to be strong enough to bear all this.
In fact, even then, sorry to stop you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when they see Swami like this, they don't know what to do. Because, and it seems it was a very, very strict discipline that when he is handling the patient, when the sorcerer is handling the patient, no relative was supposed to come and speak to the boy. And somehow Swami slips out of that, place where he is being treated and goes to the sister and mother and gives them a remedy. He says, you go and bring this and apply this to my eye.
It'll
and then
it will
subside.
Exactly. And that is when they decide that enough is enough. So they go and tell the sorcerer that, you know, we'll make Satyam strong and come back to you. Because they don't want to tell him that we are disgusted with your methods, off with you. I mean, any of us would have maybe beheaded that guy. But they tell him that we'll make Satyam strong and get him back so that you can then continue with your treatment. Now let us return. And as they're returning, that is when Ishwaramma says, let us visit the Narasimha Swami temple at Kadri. Because it is believed that Narasimha, the Narasimha avatar, is the best for exorcising ghosts. Because the mother feels that maybe something has possessed my son.
Right.
When they go to the Kadri temple, offer their prayers and they're coming out, a snake comes and bites Swami.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, yeah, I was also, you know, surprised reading this.
Mm-hmm.
When the snake bites, now imagine all this, the anger of the people who are with Swami, they go and crush that snake to death.
My God.
When Satyam comes to know that, he gets up, he walks to the body of that lifeless snake, picks it up, and tells everyone that it was no fault of the snake. He says, I am not like this because of the poison.
Mm-hmm.
And he breathes back life into that snake and sends it back into the bushes. And then sits back in the cart and heads towards Puttaparthi. This is also narrated by Venkamma.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that is how they return back. And when they return to Puttaparthi, you know, they say that over Swami's home, house, that little house that was there, an eagle is flying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Indian tradition, eagle is considered as Garuda, and if an eagle is flying, it is as if that somebody is going to die in that house. So, and it is believed that a person who dies that way goes straight to Vaikuntha, which is the abode of the Lord. But at that point in time, they felt this was an inauspicious thing. You know, Garuda flying over the house, eagle flying above the house. The minute they felt that, it seemed the eagle came and flew directly above Swami. And Swami at that time had a clean shaved head, you know, with scalp seen with those marks. After the eagle flew and went away, those marks magically disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Those cross marks that were on his head. And completely from the scalp was as good as new. But this was when that new Swami came about, you know, that angry, violent and clinching. And as you narrated, that episode happened where Uncle Chandramouli was kicked and lost his teeth.
In fact, another episode also happens, when the bullock cart refuses to go forward.
That happens after this when they come to know that in Kotta Cheruvu, there is a spiritual
doctor.
Person
right.
Known as Sidgunananda Swami.
Mm-hmm.
Or he is also called Chidgananda Maharaj.
Okay.
So they tell, let us take him, because he is a spiritual personage, maybe he will help. So when they decide to take Swami along the route, you have to go via the Bukapattam tank.
Right.
Actually, which also comes towards Kotta Cheruvu. Cross it and then reach Kotta Cheruvu, which is, by road, it's about 12 kilometers from Puttaparthi.
Mm-hmm.
But that straight road was about 8 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're taking him, Satyam says, I don't want to go to him. But they don't listen to him, you know. The only person who is supporting Satya is his grandfather, Kondamaraju.
Mm-hmm.
Telling, listen to the boy, give him time, do what he says. But nobody is there to listen to the old man. So the decision makers are especially the brother, Sheshamaraju, and the father. So they put him in the cart and they start taking him. And it is said, you know, the bullocks refuse to move.
Right.
And also the cartman who was driving the cart, he felt that the hillocks were collapsing onto him from all sides, it seems.
Oh.
So he started, you know, shouting and screaming like as if some disastrous earthquake is taking place. And that is when, you know, they remembered what Kondamaraju says and tells, turn back. So they turn back. The minute they turn back, the cartman is fine. and the bullocks also proceed. The bullocks are ready to walk only towards Parthi and not away from Parthi. In fact, when Satya refused to go to Swami Chidgananda, Shishamaraju somehow got a message sent to him that, you know, we want to but it's not able to come. Apparently, Swami Chidgananda later on visits Puttaparthi, falls at Swami's feet and says, "Idi daya kadu, idi daiva maya." Daya meaning ghost and daiva maya mean, we know, it is divine maya.
Divine play.
So, probably Swami Chidgananda was the first spiritual personage to recognize and appreciate Swami's divinity. So he himself falls at Swami's feet. And do you remember that during one of these sessions we talked about one P.T. Krishnamachari?
Right. I mean, he was actually a lawyer or something.
Correct.
Who initiated Swami into learning, right?
Yes, Aksharabhyasam.
Right.
Yeah, so that P.T. Krishnamachari, he also had a soft corner for Swami. So when he got to know, he came to have a look at Swami. And his suggestion was that the parents should take Swami to a Narasimha Swami temple in Tamil Nadu,
okay.
Ghatikachalam.
Okay.
He said that, you know, I don't know, Narasimha, the form of the Lord, is supposed to drive away ghosts. I don't know about others, but this Ghatikachalam I can stand by. You know, he was very confident about Ghatikachalam temple. And when he told that, you know, Swami shouted back at him. Shouted back at him asking, "Who do you think is in that temple? Huh? Why do you want to take me to that temple? You don't be so stupid, don't be so foolish."
And Swami tells, "Are you taking me to me?"
Exactly.
That's what Swami says.
"Are you taking me to me?" And he tells it not in a gentle, polite manner. He shouts at him as if it is a fool who is not able to understand. And, you know, he, as you said, he was a lawyer and he was a scholarly person. When he gets put off like this, he walks away from there. When this happens, the father gets very, very, very angry. Because he thinks, who is this? And he thinks, who is this puny little child talking like this to such scholarly people? And Kasturi records in Ishwarama, the Chosen Mother, that at this point, he lost his temper completely. He walked, picked up a stick, came to him, brandished it almost as if he's hitting Swami, and asked him, "What? Are you Narayana or Narasimha? Are you a madcap, a lunatic, a ghost? Who are you? Tell me today." And he shouts at him. At that time, you know, Swami shouts back. Tells, "I am Sai Baba. I am from the Apastamba Sutra and the Bharadwaja Gotra." And when he shouts back, the father thinks that some Sai Baba creature is possessing my son. So he addresses Sai Baba. He tells, "Okay, let go of my son then. Why are you here?" He shouts, "If you are Sai Baba, why are you possessing my son?" And at this point, Swami calms down and very sweetly tells, "I am Sai Baba. I have come to your family because your Venkavaduta asked. And that is why I have come." And this revelation stuns the father. The stick drops off from his hand.
Actually, the father doesn't know who this Venkavaduta is.
Correct.
Because it was only Konnamaraju who knew Venkavaduta and who used to converse with Venkavaduta. Hmm. And it seems after that, Seshamaraju and the father go and start inquiring, who is this Venkavaduta? And that's when they realize that he is one in their own lineage who is supposed to be a very, very saintly person.
In fact, there's a temple for Venkavaduta.
Okay.
So, it means he's almost worshipped like a god. So when like these startling revelations are made, something that is not common knowledge even for the father, the stick drops off his hand, he is just bewildered. The word that comes out of his mouth are, "So? I mean, so what if you are Sai Baba and all this?" And Swami continues, you know, he says, "So, clean your homes, worship me on Thursdays." I feel this is so amazing, you know, he says, "I am Sai Baba." So what if you are Sai Baba? "So worship me. Clean your homes. I will take care of all your problems. You have prayed. Your lineage has prayed and that's why I have come. I will take care of all the problems." And this episode took place exactly 70 years ago on this day, 23rd of May. Isn't it such a special feeling, Prem, to know that we are spending time on that particular day?
I mean, I would say a very, very big understatement to say that it's a coincidence.
Hmm.
Because how beautiful that on this momentous month of May, because so many of these things have happened, as you said, a couple of days later, I think it was in the same month when Swami threw those flowers.
Ah, yes. You know how that came about?
And actually an interesting thing, I mean, before you get to that.
Okay, okay.
This was the time when Swami was, you know, as you said, showing so many different hues to his personality. One was he was very, very violent, because that might have been the Narasimha side of Swami. And then Swami was calmed down, and suddenly one day Swami would come out, call the children around, materialize objects and give it to them, give them candies, give them vibhuti. So all these
and all this publicly.
All these
before
publicly,
he used
right.
to tell the children not to tell right. the parents.
So I think that was the time when the jasmine flower incident also happens.
Yes, correct. You know, a side thought, as you were saying, not only the Narasimha avatar, if we read Shirdi Sai Satcharitra, we also come across many such instances where Shirdi Baba behaved in this so-called erratic manner.
Right.
You know, where he would get bouts of fury, temper, and then calm down. So, well, what a way to show that you are Sai Baba and then announce that you are Sai Baba. There was, you know, in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram, it is recorded as a sub-registrar in Penukonda, an officer from Penukonda. It happened to be the sub-registrar at Penukonda by the name Keshavaya. Now, Keshavaya had the good fortune of meeting Shirdi Baba.
Okay.
And at that time, Shirdi Baba was called Sai Baba because there was only one Sai Baba at that time. Unlike now when we have two Sai Babas, so we have to sell Satya Sai, Shirdi Sai. So, they got to know, you know, Sheshamaraju got to know that there is this person, the sub-registrar who knows Sai Baba. So, they thought, let us take Satya to him. Maybe he will be able to help. So they took Swami to Penukonda, to Keshavaya's home, after seeking permission and an audience from him. Now Keshavaya was a very devout Shirdi Baba devotee. And so he did what any devotee might be expected to do. He prayed to Shirdi Baba, got Udi. And he gave it to Swami and told, you take this Udi. Instantly, Swami took that Udi and threw it back at his face. And Swami materialized vibhuti from nowhere and started throwing it all around the house. I'm sorry. Swami just threw back the udi at his face. When Swami threw back the udi at his face, Swami said, don't you recognize?
Actually, he says, I think, that this is not any Sai Baba anything. It is just that this guy has gone mad.
That he tells to Satya's parents.
Right.
By the side.
Mm-hmm.
He calls Swami's parents aside and tells them, you know, this is a case of lunacy. He has gone mad.
You need to take him to an institution, that's what he says.
And when he comes back, Swami looks at him and tells, yes, it is a case of lunacy. But who is lunatic? You or me? You know, you are not able to recognize the one you have worshipped.
Swami says, you are a blind devotee because you are not able to see that form which you are worshipping in me.
And at that time, he materializes vibhuti out of nowhere and starts throwing it all around. So, what happens is, he is lost. Keshavaya has no idea what's happening. So, what he does is, he gives a photograph of Shirdi Baba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that picture, in that Love is My Form book, that picture is also presented. He gives a photograph to the parents and tells, you take him back home and worship this Sai Baba. He will take care of your child. And you know, Swami, see, this is beauty, you know, Maya, you can call it, or whatever, his divine play, Leela, Mahima. When they come to Puttaparthi, they keep this Shirdi Baba's photo at home and start worshipping it. Swami suddenly becomes a very sweet-natured and good child. You know, Ishwaramma is very relieved. She doesn't care whether it's a poison, whether it's mental, it's lunacy, or it is possession or exorcism. She doesn't care what it is. She is just happy that her son is back. And so it continues like this for some time. When suddenly, you know, Keshavaya gets to know that, you know, Swami has become fine. So he feels that Shirdi Baba did a great job. You know, my Lord never lets me down, I know. So with a few of his people, he comes to Puttaparthi to have a look at Swami. At Satya, the boy who got cured of his lunacy by Baba's Udi. That's what he thinks.
Okay.
But the minute he comes to Swami, Swami again goes back to that violent temper thing, throwing things around, speaking whatever and shouting at people. And when Keshavaya's followers, they see that, they get very upset. Because for them, Keshavaya is their boss, their head, he's a sub-registrar. So they tell, what are you shouting, your Sai Baba? show us some proof that you are Sai Baba if you are Sai Baba. At that time, Swami asks for some jasmine flowers, which he holds in his cupped hand and throws it in the air. And as they fall down, in beautiful Telugu, they form the letters Nenu Sai Baba, which means I am Sai Baba. And that is how that flower episode took place a few days after when he declared that I am Sai Baba first time. And after this, as you said, Prem, Swami was a completely changed boy. It is said that he gave up his old company also, all his friends. Only a few, three or four of his old friends he retained friendship with. Friendship retained meaning he used to talk to them and interact with them on a regular basis. He was no longer available for all. And one of the boys who, for whom he was still available, his name was Tunga Gangappa. And there's one beautiful, you know, when they say that the Lord pines for the devotee as much and as intensely as the devotee pines for the Lord. When Swami had to leave Bukkapatnam and go to Uravakonda, it seems Tunga Gangappa walked up to Swami and said, Swami, that's all, is it? Is it all over now? You are leaving me and going off to Uravakonda? Because Tunga Gangappa was not going to proceed for any higher studies. So Swami also becomes emotional and says, why don't you also come along with me? He says, your brother has written, Satya, that you will be becoming a big revenue officer. You know, that is what career the parents and the brother envisage for Swami. You will be becoming a revenue officer, so for you education is needed. But my father tells me that I have to grow crops, so for me agriculture is needed. So that's it, this will be the end. And Tunga Gangappa's mother, also, you know, very attached to Swami, gets a piece of bread and offers it. And with a very heavy heart, Swami bids goodbye to Tunga Gangappa. So after all this happens, when Swami becomes an introvert and all by himself, he still retains his friendship with Tunga Gangappa in Puttaparthi. It is said like that. And Swami began to spend a lot of time in the hills and dales that surrounded Puttaparthi. In fact, it was at this point in time that the other mother of Swami, Karanam Subbamma.
That phase is going to start in a short while. But before that, actually, Swami, for a very, very brief time, goes back to the Uravakonda school.
Correct.
This whole thing happens in Puttaparthi. And after Swami is, you know, according to the people around him, when Swami is spending more time in a normal demeanor, they say that, okay, let us take him back to school. And that was also the beginning of the next academic year.
Correct. In June, because May 23rd is his declaration, a few days after that is that flower episode, and then in June the schools reopen, June end or July, that is when Swami is taken back to Uravakonda, because, you know, again it is Sheshamma. Sheshamma Raju seemed, you know, I feel is an epitome of the kind of modern day lopsided scientists, who feel that they are very scientific in approach, but refuse to see things happening before their own eyes. And so he felt that if I take back Swami to Uravakonda, getting back into the routine and rigors of the school, maybe senses will get knocked back into him and he'll become normal from this abnormal boy that he is.
Quite similar to, you know, it happens in so many of these saints, even in the life of saints, when Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, you know, starts exhibiting abnormal behavior, he's got married. They say, you know, you get him into a regular life, then he will come out of this madness. I think this is a common feature in the lives of people who are around such noble souls.
Before we conclude, Prem, one point that always strikes me is, why did Swami have to undergo all this? You know, everything is there in the wave of his hand. From choosing to be born in such a real God-forsaken place, to choosing such a materially poor family, to choosing such... You know, he could have just breathed out hard, and that Mupur Appaya Swami and others who did such things to Swami would have been thrown away into out of Earth's orbit. But he underwent all that, and that is when I felt, you know, there's one famous saying that goes that an average teacher tells, a good teacher explains, a great teacher demonstrates, the best teacher inspires. And I felt, in order to demonstrate and inspire the great teacher that Swami is, chose to go through, do what he did. Because he always says his life is his message.
And very true, you know, as it keeps coming again and again in Swami's life, there are two things which Swami is doing parallelly. One was supernatural things, you know, which were things which normal human beings cannot do. What you call miracles, powers, materializations. Because we associate divinity and supernatural abilities to these kind of acts.
Correct.
At the same time, Swami was constantly doing another thing, which was expressing his forbearance. And Swami Shama. Also wanted us to associate divinity with that quality.
Yeah, that quality of beautiful prema.
Quality of forbearance. Mm. So that was a message which Swami was always giving, as we've spoken before. But Swami was, you know, coming to our level and raising us to his level. And as we were to see, you know, in the rest of Swami's life, this was a message which was constantly again and again given to all of us. That Kshama, I remember how many discourses Swami has spoken only about that quality of Kshama.
Correct.
And what better example or inspiration for that quality than this entire episode, this Urvakunda days of Swami.
I really feel that May 23rd should be special as something like a Kshama day or something, because it really shows the culmination of the events which demonstrate and inspire in us this Kshama. Did you notice, Prem, that for the last 1 hour we didn't take any break? It's almost 2 o'clock and it's supposed to be the end of our segment. Chandu is already here waiting for us to conclude. And we have not taken even one break, one music break. This is what happens when we talk of his story.
So, dear listeners, this was this week's Satyam Shrim Sundaram episode. We are still not away from Urvakunda. As we said, Swami goes back to Urvakunda, and again, a very, very important event happens in Urvakunda, from where begins the story of the avatar. What we've been speaking so far is that of how Swami introduced the people around him to the concept of what he is and the divinity that he was here to manifest. And then as Swami declares, my devotees are waiting, my mission is waiting for me, and there's going to be a blast of events which will happen after that, and we will be talking about that next week on Afternoon Satsang. So till then, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is
Arvind from Team Radio Sai, and both of us offer our collective gratitude at the lotus feet of our most beautiful Swami and thank him for this wonderful opportunity to have this satsang on his own radio from the spiritual capital of the universe, Prashanthi Nilayam.
So dear listeners, we're going to leave you with a song. This is the day Swami gave us his name. So what better way than to contemplate and to enjoy this name of Swami. I'm going to play a song for you, which is composed by Swami and was sung by Swami on many occasions. Swami says that this name of Swami is a sweet which I've come to share with all of you. I'm giving this all to you. And we're going to leave you with the song. On the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Chandu from Team Radio Sai with his program, Love to Love.
Sai Rama Manu Mitai Digo Rendu Batulara Sai Rama Manu Mitai Digo Rendu Batulara Bhumi Logar Koi Mitai Niti Di Pamaru Rai Tadi Povata Munu Be Sai Rama Manu Mitai Digo Love.